Okay, Rabbi Isai, the air conditioning should be kicking in any moment. Somebody just said when everybody works together, it's amazing what can happen under 5 minutes, set up the entire room. I thank the people who brought some of the food up here. Therefore, anybody wants to bench afterwards or in the middle, whatever, you can bench in this room because people are eating. Probably, okay, fine. Okay, Rabbi Heber has done something for Klal Yisrael which has caught everybody's attention. He is going to be speaking about this phenomenon called the eclipse, which is going to be taking place in August. And right now there's a lot of people who are going to the area of St. Louis. I'm sure Rabbi Heber is going to be talking about that as well. I did not know that Rabbi Heber himself was raised in St. Louis. That's why the eclipse is taking place there. Most people don't know that. That's really, really what's happening here. Kodesh Baruch Hu is running the world. And I would just like to say that it's a Kiddush Hashem. I got to shul this morning at... Okay, you'll talk to us later. Okay, so anyways, it's a Kiddush Hashem this morning before 6 o'clock already. There were people learning here. And the Kollel Breaker was here this morning. And Daf Yomi was here this morning. And people have been learning in the shul since before 6 o'clock this morning. And now on a day which is the rest of the world is on vacation, we have, Baruch Hashem, an opportunity to learn Torah, understand Torah, and especially in such a unique, about such a unique topic. Rabbi Heber is a person who is involved in what's called zamanim on halacha, and therefore we should be able to take advantage of him and be meroymeim the kedusha of Torah by listening to divrei Torah on a holiday morning when I don't want to say what everybody else is doing. We're learning Torah. Gevaldik. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Cohen, Brishus, Mar Da'asra, and Rabbi Stolper. It's a grand honor to be here in the shul. I was eichet to learn in Chicago Tal, so Chicago is very near and dear to me. And in fact, my old classmate, Rabbi Yaki Eisenbach, who I'm sure many of you know well, reminded me that this is not my first speech on eclipses in Chicago, because when we were in ninth grade, there was a total solar eclipse actually that took place in the last total solar eclipse that took place in the 48 states. It was actually the northwest section of the United States, Seattle and that area. And in Chicago, you were able to see it. And we were in Rabbi Weiss, Rabbi Shul Feinberg Weiss, Shlita Shir, and we were looking out the window. I was given drushes over there off to the side before Shir. And so he reminded me that this is really, really my second opportunity to be able to speak on the eclipse. First, I want to talk a little bit about what an eclipse is in general, just so we appreciate the Niflos HaBayre and really how it ties in both the Divrei. We'll get a little bit into Halacha, and then we'll take a turn to Agada, and then we'll talk at the end about how what we see is really a show and tell to something that goes on every month and has a gewaltige impact, a tremendous impact on the Jewish calendar. When Rosh Chodesh Tammuz, we announced the Maylad, we had Rosh Chodesh, and then there'll be Av and Elul, etc. All of that is contingent on what occurs, and when an eclipse happens, we actually propel, we see what is occurring in the sky and its impact on the Jewish calendar. So what is an eclipse? As is well known, there are many movements out in space, out in outer space. The Earth is spinning on its axis. We have sunrise, we have Shacharis, we have sunset, we have Maariv and Shabbos ends. And then, of course, the moon is also going around the Earth. And it takes about 29 and a half days for the moon to go one time around the Earth. And when that happens, we have a full moon, and that's when the moon is on the opposite side. If you have the sun over here, and you have the moon over here and the Earth in the middle, so the same sunlight that's shining on the Earth is shining on the moon. That happens around the 15th of the month, Purim time, Pesach, Sukkot. The new moon is when the moon comes around and finds itself in between the Earth and the sun. So every month that happens, and that's known as the Shas HaMaylad. More on that in detail a bit later. But every single month, the moon gets smaller and smaller, the 25th of the month, 26th of the month, and finally, the 29th of the month, you basically don't see the moon. And by the Maylad, by the time of the moon is situated directly between the Earth and the sun. Now, most months, the moon is a little bit higher or lower. In other words, if you looked at a bird's eye view, you would see them directly aligned. You would see the Earth here, the moon here, and the sun here. the sun is shining on the opposite side, so that's why you don't see the moon. It's dark. You're looking at the dark side of the moon, but it's if you look at it three dimensional, the moon is a little bit higher or a little bit lower. But every so often, that moon blocks the sunlight from reaching the earth. And that happens really maybe a couple times a year from somewhere on earth. You're able to see this. And what happens is the moon actually situates itself directly between the earth and the sun. So it's a nice, beautiful, sunny day outside. And if you're in the right location, you look up at the sun, and it's slowly the moon begins to block this sunlight until eventually, if it's a total eclipse, then the entire sun is blocked and it gets dark. It's like nacht, right? It's the middle of the night for 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, depending on where you are and depending on when this happens. In the United States, the last time a total solar eclipse occurred was 38 years when I was learning in Chicago. The last time a total solar eclipse went from the Pacific Ocean to the Atlantic Ocean was 99 years ago. In 1918, there was a solar eclipse that began on the West Coast that worked its way all the way through the country. As the moon, of course, all these movements were happening, as the moon was moving, and as the Earth is spinning on its axis, etc. And now this crossed the entire country. So this year, on Erev Rosh Chodesh, El Habo Leinu Al Kol Yisrael L'Toivo, Monday, August 21st, there will be a total solar eclipse that will begin. One will be able to see it beginning in Oregon. It will cross through numerous states, and it goes sort of at a southeast cut. It'll go through Wyoming. It'll go through Missouri. It'll go through southern Illinois, and then it'll end up Tennessee, and finally South Carolina, to name some of the states. So the excitement here is that for the first time in 99 years, a large part of the United States will be able to see this. Millions of people live along that path, and millions more could come to that area. Now, we'll talk a little bit later, actually, halachic implication of the fact that a solar eclipse is only visible it's only from certain areas. You have to be in the right place at the right time to be able to see that. We contrast that with a lunar eclipse, which happens more often from the ability to see it. By a lunar eclipse, it's not as exciting, but a lunar eclipse happens where the opposite effect, where you have the moon is over here and you have the earth in the middle, and now you're looking at a beautiful full moon and the earth goes ahead and blocks the sunlight from reaching the moon. So it's a nice, beautiful full moon outside, and you look up, and what do you see? You see it starts to get covered and covered and covered, and it's basically the shadow of the earth is shining on the moon, so you see the moon get dark. Technically, if you were on the moon at that time, it would be a solar eclipse. You would have a nice sunny day, and you're looking up in the sky, and all of a sudden this celestial body called the earth blocks that. Now, what's interesting is that and as yin that know how the basics of the calendar, we have an appreciation for this. A solar eclipse always happens either on Rosh Chodesh or Erev Rosh Chodesh, or maybe 2 days before Rosh Chodesh. Why? Because Rosh Chodesh happens when there's a new moon. We announced the Maylad, right? We announced the Maylad, it was Rosh Chodesh. By definition, an eclipse has to happen around Rosh Chodesh. Why is that? Well, very simple, because it's Rosh Chodesh when the new moon is happening. And an eclipse could only happen b'shas ha-maylad, because the maylad is when the earth when the moon is situating itself between the sun and the earth. The moon gets stuck in between. That happens at the time of the new moon. By definition, that event's going to take place on Rosh Chodesh or thereabout. And the lunar eclipse is going to take place as well. It's going to take place around Tesvav or Yudalid, because it's the opposite. When is there a full moon? There's a full moon around the middle of the month. So therefore, you see this beautiful full moon. All of a sudden, the earth situates itself between the earth situates itself between the sun and the moon, and therefore it gets dark. So that's the basics of an eclipse. I should mention the next total solar eclipse in the United States will be in 7 years. It was 38-year wait. The next one will be in 7 years. And interestingly enough, Illinois is the state. Southern Illinois, near Carbondale, is the place where that's going to get both of those eclipses, because that eclipse is going to start, I think, in Texas and works its way sort of northeast through Illinois and I think up through Michigan. So Illinois is zeicha that they have this total solar eclipse in southern Illinois, you have a place which is extremely rare. You have one place where you could stand there for 7 years and see two total eclipses, right? That's not an amazing ability to have that. Now, if you're in Chicago, you'll see a partial eclipse. In fact, anywhere in the United States, you'll see a partial eclipse, which means you'll see the sun start to get covered, and then it'll be whatever percentage it is, 70%, 80%, but then it'll veer off and it won't become total. And it was, in order to see a total eclipse, you have to be standing on that path. The path is about a 70 mile wide swath of land that if you're standing in the middle, you'll get to see it for 2.5 minutes, and if you're standing on the extremes, then you will see it, you know, maybe for a few seconds. It goes north of Kansas City, it then goes south of St. Louis, and if you want to go from Chicago, it's really it's 4 or 5 hours away. The Carbondale area in southern Illinois, you'll be able to see a total solar eclipse for a couple of minutes. I'm going to be in the Kansas City area in St. Joseph, together with Rafishel Gross, who's a caterer in Baltimore, and Rabbi Uri from Eretz Yisrael, and we have a tour that's going there, kosher-eclipse.com, but we're going to be in a place where, by the airport, 100,000 people are going to be there. Now, we're not going to the airport, we're going to be at a mall, away a little bit from the major crowd, but again, they're worried about traffic and exactly getting there. So if you want to get to Carbondale down I-57, you want to give yourself extra time to get there. Now, the biggest question that's asked on this is, do you make a bracha on an eclipse? You think it's Los Habayre, you think you should make a bracha. In fact, Rav Vosner says tzarich lischashev edavar. You have to, right? Mitav Harvin, whether or not you should make a bracha. And I saw in the Sefer Shar HaAyin, Hadvar, interesting, he declares the following, that the items listed in the Shulchan Aruch, Hadvarim hamuskarim b'shulchan aruch kibrokim v'ra'amim, we make on thunder and lightning and earthquakes. And I also lived in California. I was like to be in the Cone in San Diego, where I was like to make a nice and massive voracious on an earthquake. I made a David a little bit wrong, because it was my first time my wife and I felt the earthquake. We didn't know what was happening. The brake front was shaking and the shower doors were shaking, and by the time we chapped what it was, this is an earthquake. Now we know. I said, I missed the bracha on the earthquake. You know, I didn't have the chance to do this. So there was an aftershock in the middle of the night. So we were zeichet to make the Isam HaSeberetius. But he clears, is the Isam HaSeberetius, maybe Chazal selected certain examples, but really on any Umniflos HaBayre, one should make a bracha. See, he clears the Shaila. Halacha L'maisa, we don't make a bracha. Even though in Lomdus, we could think about it and talk about it, but Halacha L'maisa, a bracha is not recited. The question is, why not?
I asked for Schwab's, that's all. He told us that I told us not to make a bracha.
Right, the general consensus, again, it's not, there's nowhere in Shulchan Aruch does it say, and the consensus of the Paiskim is not to. Right, it's not part of Shulchan Aruch, the only, this Hakira, this in the Sefer of Shara Ayin, Rav Ozner, is maybe it's selective. They have the same Shara by Pasav Bakistin, this is not a Bracha Shir, but are the examples of Pasav Bakistin like a Danish or a pretzel, is that definitive, or is those examples? The Nafkamina would be like a soft pretzel, right, it's a snack. But it doesn't meet any of the qualifications of Pasav Bakistin. So some make them a mitzi, some pretzel, some make them a zayin, right? It's the same concept. That hakir is over here. Are these definitive examples, thunder, lightning, earthquakes, etc.? Or is it in general? L'maisa, we the minig is not to make a bracha. Why not? Right? So I didn't have something.
Is that a shooting star or a comet?
A shooting star, we also make a bracha, right? That's also a bracha. Shooting stars, comets. Birchas Hachama, we make, even though Birchas Hachama, that's another shmooze every 28 years. There, you don't even see anything. It's just the whole thing's a cheshbon. The whole thing's a calculation. So why not? So Reb Chaim Kanevsky writes, and this is based on the Gemara in Sukkah, he writes, it's Ein Simon Toif. Not a Simon Toif. The famous Gemara in Sukkah, Taf Chavtes Avad Alf, which I want to talk a little bit about as well. Tar Rabbanim, Bisman Shachama Loikin Simon Ra Loik de Kachavim. When there's a solar eclipse, it's a simon ra for the umas ha'olam. Levana, when there's a lunar eclipse, levana like a simon ra l'sedein shel Yisrael. It's a simon ra for sedein shel Yisrael. That's a euphemism for Klai Yisrael. Mipnei she Yisrael ma'in levana, because Klal Yisrael go by the, we count our calendar by the moon, and Va'akum Lachama. Now the Chul Kadeis, so the Gemara there, right? There are different opinions. Some say the bottom line is an eclipse is a simon of Purani ice. It's a simon of Purani ice, and therefore, since it's a Purani ice, our tzaros, our problems, and therefore, we don't make a bracha on something which is considered Puranias. We don't make a bracha, even though Puranias for the Umas Ha'olam. I'm gonna save our questions a minute. Let me get through this. Even though Puranias Umas Ha'olam, but that's Puranias to the world. It's Tzaris. It's problem. It's such a thing. We don't make a bracha in such a case. The Gemara continues and says Al Dalat Dvarim Chamaloika. Right. One of the examples is an Av based in Shemes Ve'enai Nispad Kalocha. An abbas and a gadol who's nifter and there's no hesped, it brings an eclipse. Now, all the mafarshim asked. In fact, the mafarshim lose a lashon of hatzeirim hukshu, dachaku tzeirim. Everybody's all the tzeirim, even the youth, asked this question: what does it mean? It's a simin ra l'Yisrael. We know what is going to happen. The scientists can tell you, you know, every eclipse is going to happen. They'll tell you to the second. They know exactly in St. Joseph, Missouri, you're standing literally to the second. They can tell you when it's going to happen and how much. So I mean, Simon Ra, you want to say something happens that's impossible, that we don't know, that's unpredictable, like an earthquake is an unpredictable. We don't have the ability to predict an earthquake. Lo Aleinu, Rahman al-Islam. We don't have the ability to do that. So that's a simon. Let's say that's a simon. But something like an eclipse, that's known. We know exactly what it is. So what does that mean? This is the kasha. Yarish Dvash asked this kasha. And in fact, Yarish Dvash learns a whole different pshat in the Gemara. He learns that it means sunspots. It means things that happen on the sun that are not necessarily as predictable. A whole different pshat in the sugya. Nothing to do with eclipse. The Ben Yoyada says, a lashon of Yisoyru Lekitruk. It means, of course we know when it's going to happen. It just means that the Makatrik and those who are the prosecutors in Shamayim, in heaven, who are able to come to Ribbono Shel Olam and say, make claims, are given a kayach le'aleinu. So that's the simin ra, right? Things are difficult. I saw in Gebracht, B'Shem, the Sefer Divrei Yosef, very interesting. He brings from Neid of Yehuda's Hesped. He brings in the eulogy, in the hesped of that the Night of Yehuda once said. He said very interesting. He said that why is it that when an Av based and a great scholar passes away and they don't eulogize him properly, they don't eulogize him properly, an eclipse happens. What's the connection? So the Night of Yehuda, the great Cheskel Lando Prague, says a Gvalg, I said, it's a tremendous explanation. He says, when you see an eclipse, you say the sun is gone. There's no sun. But that's not true. Of course, the sun is shining. If you were living on the sun, if you could, you think the sun cares that there's an eclipse going on, that 100,000 people are at the Rosecrans Airport in St. Joseph, Missouri? No, they couldn't care less, because the sun is shining bright. It happens to be that you're standing here on Earth, and you're looking up, and you see it's gone, but the sun is still shining. He says when a tzaddik is nifter, when a tzaddik, a righteous person is nifter. So the people, it's an eclipse for us. It's an eclipse that we're missing something. Something's gone. Something's not here. And therefore, but in reality, tzaddikim apni sasa mikruchayim, righteous people, even when they die, are alive. They're alive and well. Their Torah flourishes. Their Torah continues. Their life, their kaychas continue. We live off of the tzaddikim of the Gemara of Tanoim, Mishnayis, and Gamaroim, and Gedoyla Hador, who were the previous generation. We live off their Torah. They're still alive, totally alive. And therefore, to us, it's the eclipse. But in reality, they're still alive. Now, interesting, in the Mesaris Maisha, in the footnote, it brings a raya, a proof to this, that on Tzaris, you don't make a bracha. Because we know that the Gain, the Vilna Gain in Simon Ches, on his commentary on Shulchan Aruch, says, Ein mevarchan al peronias. He says, beferish, he says, we don't make a bracha on problems. Ukemay mayim achroinim. We don't make a bracha on mayim achroinim. When you wash at the end of a meal, there's no bracha al tzadayim. You don't make a bracha on mayim achroinim. Why not? He says, "Kamei machrayim of Piranha Yais." It was the Melech Stimus, the salt, the dangerous salt that was there that people would put in their mouth by accident. It was a tzar. We don't make a brach on those things. So you see, the footnote of Besaris Maisha, he brings this proof that on a Piranha Yais, you don't one doesn't make a bracha. What's that? Right, so Dayan Emes, so that's a different type of bracha. In other words, the Piranhas, when someone dies, God forbid, the close relatives, the Shiva Krivim, the children, etc., make a bracha. That, I think, is a whole different type of bracha. It's a bracha on, that was established on Piranhas, recognizing that these Piranhas that Hashem brings, and that we you know, Hashem is the truthful judge. So that bracha was created, I guess, because it was an open tzara, whereas an eclipse is only a sibin, it's a sign of a tzara. Right, good question. So they asked this question, right? They asked this question, and I saw somewhere in a footnote in the back of the Masifta Gemara on a rainbow. So a rainbow might have been because it's a special zechira. In other words, we're thanking the Ribbono Shel Olam for not destroying the world at this time. So it's the Zoichar Habris. In other words, I think maybe the Piranhas here are hidden. I'm making this up right now as an answer. But the Piranhas there are hidden. It's a simon of Piranhas. We don't see it. So when it's something that is, even the Melech Stimus, the salt at the end of the meal, like, we don't know what that is. So on such a thing, we don't make a bracha. We don't know what's going to come from it. But where something is a definitive, right, where Hashem would have destroyed the world, or if someone has passed away, a special bracha was created. That's what you have to answer. But you're asking good. Kasha, as my Rabbi Weiss used to say, the kasha is better than the teres. Right, the question is better than the answer. Let me go. I'm going to take questions at the end because I got a lot to cover. There's another fascinating halachic discussion that's here, and that is the Das Noita, Reb Chaim Kanevsky. He says he has the following question. We did a little introduction. Rashi in the Sefer HaPardes wants to say that which you're exempt from tzitzis at night, that's only if you don't have a light on. Or if a person goes to sleep and they turn off the lights, so you're part of tzitzis. You're exempt. You don't have to wear tzitzis. It's night. It's dark. But if you have artificial light at night, which we all do, right? We're in the house. We turn on the light. It's there. Then you have to put on tzitzis. That's the Rashi. So Chaim Kanevsky says, if that's the case, maybe we could say the opposite is true too. And he says, if it's the middle of the day and there's a solar eclipse and it's like the night, so maybe for those 2.5 minutes you're exempt from tzitzis, right? Maybe you're punter from tzitzis in such a case. But then he says, no, it's a mikra ba'alma. It only happens periodically. It's only a fleeting moment, and therefore you totally b'yom ragil. It goes by a regular day. The last interesting halachic shaila before I get to the calendar part of it is the Nishma Shabbos in Siman Samach Tes says, what if a person is afraid of an eclipse because it gets dark and the animals get scared? That's one of the interesting things about a total solar eclipse. They say that, you know, it becomes very eerie and the animals start to, you know, wonder what's going on, and they consider it night, and it's very, you know, I've never been to a total solar eclipse before, but it becomes this sort of, you know, what's going on kind of thing. So people get scared. So what happens if it happens on Shabbos? And it happened in 1970. There was an eclipse. I remember as a little kid, there was an eclipse, a total solar eclipse that actually went through, I believe, Miami and then New England area, and it was a total solar eclipse. I was saying it took place on a Shabbos. And Lamaisa, what if people are scared? Can you ask a guy to turn the light on? I was here, you're sitting in the house, you know, there's no light, it's plenty of light outside. All of a sudden it gets dark. So is pachad, is fear, enough? Amir lakum, not to ask a guy, not to ask a Gentile to turn on a light on Shabbos. But what if you're afraid? Or what if a kid's, you know, if a kid, they're scared, and now you're sitting in the dark, is it permissible or not? So he brings this case by an eclipse. And the answer is, a chayla, amir lakum, asking a Gentile to do something on Shabbos for a chayla, for someone who's ill, is permissible. So Nishma Shabbos says, if someone's in fear, someone's afraid, fear is like a chayla. Fear is like a chayla. And therefore, you're allowed to, they say this, okay, let's say a child has a nightlight on in the room. Okay, a child especially needs a nightlight. They won't fall asleep, but they're nervous and they're scared. Without the lights not on, they're both burnt out, So you can ask a guy. You normally can't ask a guy to turn on a light on Shabbos. Under certain conditions, you can hint on Shabbos. Even hinting, in many cases, is not allowed. It's not Shabbos guy is not a clear cut heter. It's not always permissible. There's all sorts of guidelines. But if a child or even an adult is afraid, then halacha is one is allowed to ask a guy. Now, there's an interesting halacha that the Beis Yosef brings. The Beis Yosef, of course, was the Shulchan Aruch, the Yosef Karo. And in the Shulchan Aruch, he says as follows. Not in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Beis Yosef, which was his commentary on the tour, he brings a Maril. And this is when we learn this halacha, we will have a greater appreciation of an eclipse, which is always the most beautiful way of learning science, is when you learn it through the eyes of Chazal. You see how much Chazal understood, and you gain an appreciation of how much science they understood and the details of what it was, and also we appreciate science more because we see it through the eyes of Chazal. And that's as follows. This relates to Kiddush Levana, and this needs a bit of an introduction. We say Kiddush Levana every month, right? We said Matzei Shabbos this past Matzei Shabbos, Kiddush Levana. And every month we say Kiddush Levana. When do you say Kiddush Levana? So no, you say it from any time from the beginning of the month until halfway through the month. Now let's define that. Beginning of the month, you have to wait 3 days after the Shas HaMailad. The Mailad again is the time of the new moon, and you have to wait at least until 72 hours after the new moon. There's discussions whether the prevalent minig is to wait till the first month of Shabbos, even if 3 days pass. Some people say it right away. There's Zoras, a special school of Kiddush Levana. Right, special protection, whatever it is, you got to wait till at least 3 days. Some chassidim they wait 7 days. Hakol kafi aminik. Everything is according to the custom. That's the beginning of Kiddush Levana. But what is the latest time to say Kiddush Levana? So everybody knows the second half of the month you can't say Kiddush Levana. If you've got Kiddush Levana, it's already chaf, right? Chaf Tammuz, right? Too late, right? Too late. It has to be as the moon is getting bigger. Once the moon is getting smaller, then it's too late to say Kiddush Levana. Okay, well, what time is that? When exactly is the halfway point of the month? So it doesn't go by the day of the month. It doesn't go the 15th. It goes by the time of the Mailad. So again, we announce the Mailad on Shabbos a week and a half ago. Every shul in Klal Yisrael, the Mailad was announced, it was posted, and the Mailad was at a certain time. So the Ramah brings a Maril that says that you have exactly halfway through the month. How do you make that calculation? Okay. So it takes, on average, and remember that word average, it takes 29 days, 12 hours, 44 minutes, and one chelek, we'll define the chelek in a minute, for the moon to go around the earth. Roughly 29 and a half days. 29 days, 12 hours, 44 minutes, and one chelek. So a couple footnotes here. Number one, that's why months go 29 and 30. Tammuz is going to be 29 days. Tammuz is 29 days. Av is 30 days. Elul is 29 days. Tishrei is 30 days. Back and forth, back and forth. Why is that? Why is it 29-30? Because it takes 29 and a half days. Now we can't have a 29 and a half day month. So basically, at 29 and a half, 2 months, comes out to 59. So do 30-29. And therefore, you're able to keep up with the moon properly. That's why the months go 29-30, 29-30. Basically, that happens. The other thing is, how long is a chelek? A chelek is 3 1/3 seconds. A chelek is 3 1/3 seconds. There are 18 chalakim in a minute. There are 1,080 chalakim in an hour. 18 chalakim in a minute, which means if you listen carefully, you pay attention when they announce the Mailad, you'll see that every month the net Mailad number increases by one. You have to halk up every month. So the Tammuz, I don't even know myself, I think it was 13. Anybody know what the Mailad was? Was it they announced 13 chalakim? I think it was 13. If I'm wrong, I apologize. But let's say it was 13. Next month it's going to be 14. And Elul is going to be 15. And Tishrei is going to be 16, and Cheshvan is going to be 17, and then it's going to go back to zero. Why? Because they don't announce 18 chalakim. Because 18 chalakim is 18 times 3 1/3 is 60. It's an entire minute, right? It's an entire minute, and therefore the minute column gets an extra one in the minute column, and therefore it goes back to zero again, and then again one chalak, two chalakim, three chalakim, etc. Every 87 years, and either 4 or 5 months, which you have a Mailad at the top of the hour, right? 2 a.m. No chalach, no minutes, no chalachim. That last happened, we announced that Shabbos Mevarchim, Cheshvan 2004. So you're going to have to wait till 2092 for the next opportunity to have the Gabbai announce, right? It was in World War I, then it was 2004, and then it's going to happen again in 2092, right? That's when you calculate how old you'll be then, right? So Lamaisa, that's when it's the top of the hour. But you see that every month increases. Now that Maylad is most important by the month of Tishrei. By the month of Tishrei, because that Maylad sets when Rosh Hashanah is. The entire year, if we have time at the end, I'm going to elaborate on this a little bit more. But that Maylad of Tishrei is what determines the whole year. Because whenever Tishrei happens, if you look at a calendar, you see that, well, the months are pretty much in place, except for Cheshvan and Kislev, which if we have time, we'll get to that. But basically, if the Maylad occurs at, let's say, Monday morning at 8 a.m., then Rosh Hashanah is on Monday. And if the Maylad occurs on Thursday, Thursday morning at 1 a.m., then Rosh Hashanah is on Thursday. So, and then the rest of the year pretty much falls into place. If Rosh Hashanah is on Thursday, that means that, well, El had, Tishrei is going to be 30 days, and the past El was 29 days, so you know when Shavuos was, and Pesach is, and your birthday, and your bar mitzvah, and everything falls into place. And the Shas HaMoilad is a critical time to determine when Rosh Hashanah is, which allows the entire year to fall into place. The other reason we need to know the Shas HaMoilad is because that will help us determine when we can say Kiddush Levana until. Because the Ramah brings from the Maril that, okay, you're not going to determine halfway through the month. Very simple. If you look at the Ramah, I'm going to say the exact term in Ramah, and now you'll understand what it means. Chatzi Choftes Yud Beis Tashtzag. What does that mean? What is half of 29? You know what it means? It means the Maylad, on average, takes 29 Choftes days, Yud Beis, 12 hours, Tashtzag. Tashtzag are 793 Chalakim. The Ramah did not deal with minutes. They dealt strictly with Chalakim. So 44 minutes is equal to 792 Chalakim plus 1 is 793 Chalakim. So the Ramah writes, Chatzi Chof Tes. It's a Hilchot Kiddush Levana. It's in the Tav Chof Vav. Chatzi Chof Tes. Yud Beis Tashtzag. He means halfway between 29 days, 12 hours, 44 minutes, and one Chalak. That is when you can say Kiddush Levana, because that is the halfway point of the new moon. In other words, the new moon, the moon's over here. Here's the earth, here's the sun. The moon is over here. Take 29 and a half days to go all the way around. Halfway, very simple. Take that number, 29, 12, and 793, chalakim, 44 minutes and one, divide it in two. So that will tell me when the new moon happens. And therefore, when the moon is halfway around, it's half of 29 days, 12 hours, and change. Okay, so how much is that? How much is that? So that's going to be 14 days, 18 hours, 22 minutes, and a half a chalak. Now half a chalak is 1.5 seconds. So if you wait till then, say Kiddush Levana, you're in trouble. That last chalak, right? You're in trouble. Actually, there's many years ago, I was in Taos, my very Shmuel Feivel Weiss introduced me to a sefer Shana B'Shana B'Alacha, and in there, I saw a vart about this week's parsha. That's why I mentioned it. That is a whole shaylik. If you start davening before this man, sometimes you get a call, especially in the winter. Somebody woke up late. It's 11:49. Can I daven shachar still? Right, chatzai is 11:51. Chicago chatzai is even earlier. Can I daven? So they want to bring a raya that by Bilam. Bilam cursed Klal Yisrael in the rega, when there was a rega that Hashem is zam, there's anger. I said, well, how do you fit? Tais asked Akasha. How do you fit a klala into a rega? There are 10 shitas, 10 opinions in how long a rega is. It ranges somewhere between one. They all have an 8 in them in the decimal. I wrote this up once. 0.0888 seconds. Point. It's less than a millisecond. So how do you curse? How did Bilam curse somebody in a millisecond? So the answer is, well, he started that and it continued. He started that and continued. Someone wanted to bring a raya that, okay, if I start Shemoneh Esrei, if you start Shemoneh Esrei, 11:49, and Chatzai, midday, is at 11:51. You didn't finish yet, but no worse than Bilam. If Bilam cursed Klal Yisrael and started, and so davening is, you know, for sure you can daven as long as you start on time. We don't say hold like that, and you don't want to wait till the last minute to daven, but there is such an opinion like that. So same thing here, Kiddush Levana, you know, Chap Rai in the last chelik, the last 1.5 seconds. Okay, so we're not going to wait that long. But so when do you say Kiddush Levana till? You have till this halfway point. It's halfway point. So how long is that? Again, it's 14 days, 18 hours, and 22 minutes. Now, I'm not going to get into a major discussion of this, but the time of the Mailad is really, you know, not standard time, so you have to deduct the 21 minutes maybe. And what about, you're in Chicago, you know, the Mailad time is the time, Yerushalayim, local time. In Chicago, you're 8 hours back. So maybe you got to deduct 8 hours from that. In other words, you have 8 hours less. So this is a whole discussion. Exactly, do you deduct the 8 hours? The Ezra's Torah Luach does not deduct those 8 hours. In Baltimore, the Luach does deduct 7 hours and gives you 7 hours less, so to speak, the Sekhish Levada. So that's a whole discussion. But the main point I want to focus on here, let's say Yerushalayim, so there's no question you're in the right time zone. You have 14 days, 18 hours, and 22 minutes to say Kiddush Levana. That's the Maril. Now, comes the Beis Yosef and says as follows, and I'll read you inside. And again, with this, we'll get an appreciation of both, first about a lunar eclipse and about a solar eclipse. The Ulufiyani Estaiti, this is in Simon Tovcha Vav, Beis Yosef brings the same Maril that goes through these calculations. Nira im Hayalikli Levana. If there's a lunar eclipse, Sha'anurayin Nigud Amiti, we see the real time of the conjunction of these celestial bodies. We see the lineup of these celestial bodies. So when you see a lunar eclipse, what are you seeing? You're seeing the moon here, and you're seeing, right, the moon is here, and the sun is here. You happen to be on the dark side, so you're looking up at a moon, but you have the moon, the sun here, the earth here, the moon there, they're all lined up. Everything's lined up. You're seeing the Nigud Amiti, the true time of the Mailad, of the halfway point. B'varashen levarach achakach. Aval stama samchina nachesh b'neinu. But stam, we rely on our calculations. Shemasu lanu rabbeisenu shehu Mailad hashava. It's the average Mailad. What does that mean? When they announce the Mailad time, if you want a homework assignment, you're going to go home, and the Gabbai's going to announce the Mailad. And you're going to go home, and you're going to look in your world almanac, or you'll look in the newspaper, or other places, and you'll see, when is the new moon? When is the new moon? I mean, the Gabbai announced the new moon was the Mailad. It was at such time, okay? Chicago's 8 hours earlier. You're going to look, you're going to see a different time in the almanac. So, one second, what's going on here? The Mailad is supposed to be the new moon. And the full moon, the halfway point between points, is supposed to be the full moon. But why does the newspaper tell me a different time? The answer is because the Mailad that we use is an average time. It's an average. That number, 29 days, 12 hours, 44 minutes, a one chelik is an average. But that's only an average. Every month, it could actually sway. It could be different. Nowadays, the new moon could be 12 hours. The new moon, in other words, when the new moon is really happening, could be 12 hours and 5 minutes after the Mailad. It'll happen in 2027, in Nisan, 12 hours later. The new moon could be 15 hours and 56 minutes before the Mailad. That's almost 16 hours. In 1929, Tishrei 1929, that happened. Maybe that's why the stock market crashed then. I don't know, right? But the new moon came almost 16 hours. So one second, you look, they announced the Mailad, and you look at the almanac, 16 hours, what's going on? What's happening here? The answer is, because Chazal worked with an average. And we find this, without getting into the Tkufas, which are the time of the seasons, which is a whole other discussion. When do we start saying, Talmata Levracha? We say it on December the 4th by Maariv, and every 4 years, December 5th by Maariv. Why a secular day? Why is that? The answer is, well, that's to do with the seasons. On the 60th day of fall, we start that. What do you mean, 60 days of fall? Fall begins on September 22nd. 60 days later is November 22nd. Why do we begin December 4th? The answer is Chazal did something very, very, very important. for us, and that is they sacrificed accuracy for simplicity. And therefore, Talmudar, the calculations we use, this is another discussion about astronomy, but the calculations we use for Talmudar have digressed from the beginning of autumn, because the Amira Shmuel in the Gemara says, we're better, Klal Yisrael should be able to, half cup, should be able to hold on to these calculations through the long and bitter gullets, and therefore, it's off a little bit, we're going to use a basic. Same thing here, the Moilat time is an average. And sometimes it actually works out. Elul 1987 was the right time. The Moilat occurred at the time of the new moon. So what does it have to do with the Beis Yosef? So Beis Yosef is saying like this. You look at a Luach, and it tells you when you can say Kiddush Levana until. You can say Kiddush Levana until such and such time. Let's give an example to illustrate this. In 1997, on the night of the 15th of El, for those keeping historical record, that was about 10 days before the Siyum HaShas in Madison Square Garden that occurred in 1997. And if you made the calculations in Yerushalayim, there was a lunar eclipse in Yerushalayim. If you calculated when Kiddush Levana could be said until, you came up with 4:02 a.m. late Tuesday night. On that night, right? On Tuesday night, you could say Kiddush Levana up until late Tuesday night at 4:02 a.m. However, if you went outside on that night, on that Tuesday night in Yerushalayim, and you stood outside at 8:46 p.m., you saw a lunar eclipse. Okay, so let's without the calculations here, the Luach said you could say Kiddush Levana until 4 o'clock in the morning, Tuesday night, on September 16th, 1997. Then it was already September 17th, 1997. You have till 4 o'clock in the morning. So that means if you forgot to say Kiddush Levana and you woke up at 1 o'clock in the morning in a cold sweat, face mirror, I forgot to say Kiddush Levana. It's the last day, look at the look. Oh, Baruch Hashem, I have 3 hours to say Kiddush Levana. You run outside. Oh, beautiful full moon. I can say Kiddush Levana. It's not yet. I still have 3 hours. But that night at 8:46, there was a total lunar eclipse, and that ended at 10:24 at night. So let's say Yerushalayim that night. You went outside, and you saw a lunar eclipse. So Zach the Beis Yosef says, you can't say Kiddush Levana anymore. What do you mean I can't say Kiddush Levana anymore? My Luach says I can say it till 4 o'clock in the morning. Zach the Beis Yosef, no. The Luach is using the calculation based on the average time. The Moilad is the average time of the new moon. But in reality, the new moon really occurred, the full moon, I'm sorry, we're by the full moon now. The full moon really occurred, it was the calculation of Kiddush Levana is based on the new moon, adding these time, you're adding up this time, and now, but the full moon in reality happened earlier. So what's happening here? The calculation said you had till 4 in the morning, because that was the average. But in reality, the full moon occurred earlier. How do you know the full moon occurred earlier? Because you go outside and you see a lunar eclipse. A lunar eclipse could only take place at the time of the full moon, which means if you were in Yerushalayim that night, by 11 o'clock at night, what a beautiful eclipse, unbelievable. And now it's 11 o'clock at night, you saw with your own eyes the full moon.
But if you saw at the beginning of the eclipse, you still have time.
Well, yes, copper rhyme, yes. But if you saw the total eclipse, and now the eclipse is gone, you experienced the full moon. The Beis Yosef says, too late. You can't say Kiddush Levana anymore. But with this, we have an appreciation of Chazal's understanding of an eclipse and what it is. So let's go back to the Beis Yosef here, and let's see how it relates to a solar eclipse, and how it even relates to this coming month. Let's read the Beis Yosef. Now we understand what he said. In my Aliga Levana, If there was a lunar eclipse, Shanu Ryan Nigun Amiti, we see the real new full moon. Bemtzos Halukus in the middle. Bevare She'ein Levarach Achakach. You do not say Kiddush Levana. You can't say Kiddush Levana anymore. Aval Stama Samchinen Achesh Beinenu Shemasu Lana Rabbeinu. But in general, we go by the calculations. You're not obligated to look at an almanac every month and calculate the full moon and say, oh, I'm going to go Kiddush Levana by the almanac. No, you go by Chazal's number, the Maila the Gabbai announced in Shul. Shul Maila Hashava. I feel now. Then he goes on and it says very interesting. He says, okay, Fine, you want to do that. But what about a solar eclipse? Now I'm going to really give you a calculation. Okay, what about if you have a solar eclipse? When you have a solar eclipse, you see the time of the new moon. That's the new moon. Are you now obligated to count halfway, 14 days, and etc., and 18 hours from that moment of the solar eclipse? Because we'll make the same argument. If you see a solar eclipse, you're standing in Carbondale, Illinois, or St. Joseph, Missouri, or Oregon, right, or Nashville, Tennessee, or Casper, Wyoming, right? You're standing there and you go outside and you see a solar eclipse. You know what you just saw? You saw the Sasa Mailat. And it's different than the time that Gabbai announced. So the Beis Yosef asks, maybe I should now start my calculations for this month for Kiddush Levana for Elul this way. And in fact, it'll happen this way. And I'm only saying this calculation just so we get to the phenomenal answer that exists to this. Let's give an example. I hope to be watching the eclipse, right? Mitzvah Shem, we're going to see the eclipse at what time? So in the central time zone, it's going to occur approximately between about 12:15 and 1:45 on Monday, August 21st. Okay, in St. Joseph, I think it's about one outside of Kansas City, it's about 1:06 p.m. and Carbondale will probably be right shortly after that, maybe 1:20 approximately. You'll see a total solar eclipse. Now, that's the moment of the new moon. That's the moment of the new moon. But if you look in the Luach, you're going to see that the Shas HaMoilad occurs much later. When the Gabbai announced the new moon, that's going to be at 9:45 at night. So one second, how could that be? How could the Shas HaMoilad be at 9:45 on Monday night, but I just saw with my own eyes an eclipse, which had to have been...
Is that your July time?
No, I changed the times. I changed it to Central Time. Right? Right? So, in other words, it's 8 hours earlier. In other words, the eclipse that we're going to see in Illinois or Missouri is happening 8 hours before the time the Gabbai announced. Which means, maybe when it comes to 14 days later and say, Kiddush Levana, maybe I should use my eclipse time. The Beis Yosef says, you don't have to do that. I saw it. The Beis Yosef said, you don't have to do that. The Beis Yosef gives his answer, and Dekei Moshe also gives an answer as well on this. Dekei Moshe asks a question on the Beis Yosef. Dekei Moshe gives his answer and says that if you do still, it's not exact calculation, you see the sun, and you're still using an average, you don't have to worry about it. But I saw a fascinating answer in the Sheir Yaakov, which gives us appreciation for a solar eclipse and how rare it happens. It says, a lunar eclipse is something which is visible to many people relatively frequently. And by means of example, it will be a lunar eclipse in January 20th and 21st. It'll be Tu B'Shvat, 2019. It'll happen about, the totality will happen over an hour. 11:45 at night to 12:45 at night. 12:45 a.m. It'll be visible totality from Anchorage, Alaska to Buenos Aires, Argentina. You know how long that area is? That's basically from the northern parts of North America to the southern parts of South America and everywhere in between. Chicago, Baltimore, the whole United States will see this lunar eclipse. So everybody sees it. So the Beis Yosef says, oh, you see, it's so common and so frequent. There we're going to use this for our Kiddush Levana calculations. But a solar eclipse, who sees it? So don't worry about it. You happen to be in the right place at the right time. Let's contrast that with the solar eclipse. It happens 70 miles wide, and you see it for 2.5 minutes. Right? 70 miles wide to the United States for 2.5 minutes, compared with the lunar eclipse, which you see from Alaska to Argentina for an hour long. So by a lunar eclipse, that's where we calculate these times. But by a solar eclipse, not necessarily. Therefore, you don't have to recognize with this. You don't have to deal with this. In the end, it's very interesting that although the Beis Yosef brings this about the lunar eclipse, and the Darkei Moshe brings it, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't bring it. The Shulchan Aruch does not bring l'halacha this. The Levush does say. Therefore, there's a question whether or not if you do see a lunar eclipse, the Shulchan Aruch seems not to worry about saying Kiddush Levana. You could still say it if your calculations go further. Ultimately, one has the ability to do that. But I think if it's a Friday night and you know there's a lunar eclipse on, let's say, Shabbos, then you would say Friday night. In other words, you can only say Friday night Kiddush Levana if it's the last night. If you could say Matzah Shabbos, but if you know there's going to be a lunar eclipse, then you don't want to wait until then. Okay, now let me before I take questions, let me just add one important point, and it's a long point, and I touched on this briefly, and that is that the beauty of an eclipse is that it's a show and tell to our luach. It's a show and tell to our luach. What do I mean? Every month, as we said, the moon goes around the earth, and there's a new moon, and that we announce the Maylat, Kesh Levana, etc. But every year, when the Maylat occurs, that is when Rosh Hashanah is going to be, as we said. So what you're really looking at, you're looking at the event that occurs every month, but it's just because the moon is blocking the sun, you're looking at this lineup of celestial bodies. And that knowing, a yid knows that when this happens every month, that's when the Eidim would look at it and see the new moon. When there was witnesses would see the new moon, and they would come to Beis Din, they would come to the court in Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim, and they would say, "We saw the new moon," and they basically would say, "Makudish, Makudish, Makudish." The month is sanctified, which we reenact every Shabbos Mevarchim, and you're seeing that when you see that moon block the earth, block the sunlight from coming to the earth. You're seeing that, and you know that every single month when this event happened, they would go to the Beis Din, they would go to the court in Shalayim, and they would declare the new month. But nowadays, we don't have that. We don't have, I'm saying, Rabbi, we don't have a Beis Din. So we, since Hillel HaShani, in the year 4119, which is 359 in the civil calendar, so we're talking some 1600, 1700 years ago, they declared every month until Mashiach to be the new month. Well, on what basis? On what basis? So you know what the basis is. As we said, the Maylat. When the Maylat occurs in Tishrei, that is when Rosh Hashanah is, as I said earlier. The new moon for Tishrei, that is when Rosh Hashanah is. There are four exceptions to this rule. And with this, we could appreciate how the entire calendar works. Parenthetically, I want to note that every seven out of every 19 years is a leap year, which really, that works, that's a seasonal issue. That works with the Earth's spinning on its axis and vis-a-vis the sun, and therefore we want to celebrate Pesach in the spring. So the only way to do that, right, if the calendar would you do 12 months, 29 and a half days is only 354, so the lunar calendar starts to go backwards. That's why the dates start to fall earlier, so we have a 19 year cycle to take care of that. We are now in the first year of the 19 year cycle, so it's not a leap year. Next year will be early. You'll see Pesach next year is March 31st, I believe. It's an early year because it's 2 years after a leap year. So the days fall early. And then you have a leap year. Year three is a leap year. Then four, five are not leap years. Six is a leap year. Seven out of 19 years is a leap year to take care of the seasonal basis. The Muslim calendar, it's interesting, the Muslim calendar only works with the moon. The civil calendar, which is what's used in the United States, is only based on the sun. We use both, right? We're really a luni solar calendar. That's why if a Muslim tells you he's 33, he's only 32. Because his calendar is missing 11 days every year. So when he's 33, 32 times 11 is about 363, but it's, right? It's a year. So he's gone, right? He's had 11 less days. See, that's why you celebrate your birthday sometimes earlier. Your secular birthday is maybe, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Or Hebrew birthday is 2, 3 weeks, 4 weeks before your birthday. But it's never more than 4 weeks because it always compensates with a leap year. Depends what year you were born. That's a whole other... If you were born a very early year, right, then it'll work one way. If you're born a very late year, it'll work the opposite way. But that's the leap year. That's seasonal. That's based on seasons. But Rosh Hashanah itself is working on the basis of the Maylat. There are four exceptions. The first exception, you know, but you might not have realized that it relates to the Maylat, the new moon. And that is the rule of Loi Adu Rosh. Loi Adu Rosh means Rosh Hashanah cannot be on Sunday, on Wednesday, or on Friday. Why not? Because if Rosh Hashanah is on a Wednesday or a Friday, Yom Kippur will be on a Friday or a Sunday. And now, imagine getting ready for Shabbos, right? The Gemara says there'll be problems with someone who passes away, and there'll be problems with cooking issues. But just practically, how's the Baal Bus supposed to put up the challenge on Friday Yom Kippur? Right? You can't, right? So how do you bench licht for Shabbos? How do you, if Yom Kippur's on Sunday, how do you bench licht? You can't do that. Can't happen. Too difficult. Yom Kippur steers clear. Why can't Rosh Hashanah be on a Sunday? Because then Rosh Hashanah Rabbah is going to be on a Shabbos, and we won't be able to take the Hashanahs. Tosfos and Sukkah asks, it says, but Shofar could be on Shabbos, and I don't pull Shofar? And Hashanah Rabbah, Ramishan, the entire calendar, I find this fascinating, the entire Jewish calendar, in all segments of Yiddishkeit, no matter every Yid, no matter what type of Yid one calls himself, celebrates the same Rosh Hashanah every year. And if the Mailat should occur on a Sunday, then guess what? Because of Hashanah Rabbah, in 3 weeks, we'll be on Shabbos to take the Hashanahs, which you now take on Shabbos. We take the Hashanahs, we beat them, we push up Rosh Hashanah an entire day. Rosh Hashanah is not Sunday, Rosh Hashanah is Monday. So imagine, but for Shofar we don't do this, Tosfos asks. Tosfos gives two answers. One answer is well, Shofar you're not going to forget because you take the second day, you blow Shofar. Hashanahs will be stuck. When are you going to take Hashanahs? If Hashanah Rabbah is on a Shabbos, you can't take the day before. You can take the day after. Shmini Atzeres, you're going to forget it. Right? The other reason, and therefore you're going to skip it 1 year, and you know what happens when you skip a minig 1 year. The next year you come to shul, and there's one guy that says, by uns, is nish the minig. We don't do that, right? By us, we don't do that. So by shofar, if you don't pull shofar 1 year, no one can say, by uns, betutnish, right? We don't do this. You pull out a chumash, and you say, hey, what do you mean? Look, it's a pasuk chumash. But a drabana, this is Tais' other answer, a drabana. Right, it's a minig, it's a minig neviim, right? It's a tachanas neviim to take a shanas. So for that, no skipping. That we make sure. We push the calendar ahead. But what does it mean, Land the Rosh? Why would Rosh Hashanah be on a Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday? What does it mean? It can't be. Why would it be? The answer is the Mailad. The Mailad, remember, the sun and the moon do whatever they want. They're moving around. The Mailad could certainly occur on a Sunday. In fact, it did recently. The Mailat occurs on a Sunday. Do you know what happens? Rosh Hashanah is pushed up to Monday. We take the Mailat, the new moon should have been on a Sunday. But instead, it's pushed up a day to Monday. The new moon was on a Wednesday. Rosh Hashanah is on Thursday. That's what happens. That's rule number one. Rule number two is if the Mailat occurs after 12 noon, Rosh Hashanah is pushed off a day. This is interesting. The basic reason for this is because, well, we're trying to mimic what would have been if there would have been a Beis Din and there would have been witnesses. You can't see a new moon right away. Nowadays it takes, I think, 14 hours. If you're in the best optimum location, it takes something like 14 hours to see. You have a telescope even, it's still going to take you, I think, 12, 13 hours to see a new moon. The Chazal gave 6 hours. A new moon happens on Monday afternoon at 3 p.m., Rosh Hashanah is the next day, Tuesday. Incidentally, the explanation to this topic, which is, I keep you for another hour on this, is the Baal Ma'or's explanation to this, what's called the Mailat Zakein. It's an old Mailat that occurs after 12 noon. The Baal Ma'or's entire explanation is based on, is there a witness somewhere in the world that's going to see this new moon, even in the furthest regions of the world, the westernmost place of the world, that's the three quarters of the world around. It's 18 time zones to the west. Is someone going to see that moon today? That Baal Ma'or is the basis of the famous Baal Ma'or and the Chazon Ish's explanation of the international dateline, which runs through China, through Australia, but the Chazon Ish runs it around Australia and China. Whole different topic, but it's fascinating that this discussion of the new moon, which we're going to see with the eclipse, and it happens afternoon, is the very basis of a very, very relevant Shaila, and that is, when is Shabbos in New Zealand? And when is Shabbos in Japan? Where is the international dateline? Which is a whole separate topic. But anyway, but that is the time of the new moon. That is the time you push off Rosh Hashanah the next day. What if the Mailat occurs on Sunday, on Shabbos afternoon at 2 p.m.? Which it did. This past Rosh Hashanah, the Mailat occurred at, I believe, about 2:30 on Shabbos afternoon. When was Rosh Hashanah? It was on Monday. Right? It was on this past Rosh Hashanah was on Monday, Tuesday. Why? The Milah occurred at 2:30 p.m. on Shabbos afternoon. Okay, so Milah Zaken. Too late. Shabbos is too late. We can't have Rosh Hashanah that day. Rosh Hashanah is the next day, Sunday. No, can't be Sunday. Ladu Reish. So Rosh Hashanah is pushed off all the way to Monday. And because of that, the whole year switched. That means last year Pesach was a Shabbos, and Shavuos was a Sunday, 3-day Shavuos. And, you know, whatever your bar mitzvah, bachur, whatever his bar mitzvah, someone's bar mitzvah was on, I had a nephew's bar mitzvah last year, he was bar mitzvah on Tisha B'Av, so he became bar mitzvah on Shabbos. All of that was a ripple effect from these rules. If the Milah would have occurred 3 hours earlier, Rosh Hashanah would have been on Shabbos. We wouldn't have blown Shofar. Pesach would have been on Thursday. My nephew's bar mitzvah would have been on Thursday, 2 days earlier. Everything had a tremendous domino effect in this. And therefore, that's the Milah. There are two other, what's called Tchiyas, but this also explains sometimes when you look at the Kiddush Levana chart, you see that it's running way off, different than the days in a month. Because you can have a Milah on Shabbos afternoon and Rosh Hashanah on a Monday. It's far off. In fact, there's a case in the year 2027, and that's my next tour, maybe. I'm going to go to the South Pacific Ocean. Why? There's a place in the South Pacific that you could say Kiddush Levana on the night of Rosh Chodesh. How? Because the Milah is so early. It's actually in the winter. It'll be during Hanukkah. Nice cruise to go to the South Pacific. It'll actually be on Hanukkah, right? It'll be on Hanukkah of 2027. The Milah is so early. And this is so far west that 3 days after the Milah, it will still be Rosh Chodesh. Because you imagine going out on Leil Rosh Chodesh and saying the Milah was 3 days ago, and be able to say Kiddush Levana. Okay, you got to go. You got to go to the South Pacific to do this. I just want to end with Divrei Haggadah on one interesting point. We spoke about Rosh Hashanah, the Milah, but how do we make sure Rosh Hashanah falls out on those days? You know, how is it that El, you know, last Rosh Hashanah to be on Monday? It just, oh well, worked out perfect. Elul, you know, last day Elul was on Sunday. Oh, wait, how did that happen? The answer is Cheshvan and Kislev. Cheshvan and Kislev are the shock absorber months. They are either 29, both 29 days. That's called a Chaser. They're both 30 days. That's called a Shalem. Or they are 29, Cheshvan is 29, Kislev is 30. That's called a Kesidron. So that's an order. That when you have a Chaser, like this year that we're in, let's work this through here. Last year, the Milad of Tishrei occurred, we saw on Shabbos afternoon. Rosh Hashanah was on Monday. This year, the Milad occurs at a time that Rosh Hashanah has to be on a Thursday. How does that happen? Well, Rosh Hashanah is on Monday. Next Rosh Hashanah is on Thursday. The year has to be 353 days. Trust me, you add up the days, you'll see. You need 353 days to make that work. Cheshvan and Kislev were both 29 days. It was a chaser. And that's why Cheshvan and Kislev were 29 days. If, as I mentioned, if the Milah had been just 3 hours earlier, Rosh Hashanah would have been on Shabbos. So how would we have fixed that? Cheshvan and Kislev would have had 30 days. And then we would push the calendar up 2 days, and this Rosh Hashanah would still fall out on Thursday. We would have compensated. So Cheshvan and Kislev are the 2 months with 29 days and 30 days that fix, make sure everything works out. When you come Rosh Hashanah, Habol and L'Toyva, it's not that far off, it's going to be on Wednesday night. You will know that Rosh Hashanah is Wednesday night because the Milah is on either occurring anywhere after 12 noon Tuesday until 12 noon Thursday. But you will know that Rosh Hashanah worked out that way because Cheshvan and Kislev were 29 days. That's how it worked. If we would have fiddled with Cheshvan and Kislev, made them an extra day, everything would have been pushed up a day. Everything would have been pushed up a day. Cheshvan and Kislev were pushed up a day. Why were Cheshvan and Kislev chosen? So the in Akdama to the Shul Derakia, which I was like to learn in Chicago when I was in high school, I photocopied. I would stay for Shabbos right here in the state. I remember everyone stopping in the old Yeshurun across the street. I had photocopies as I sat. It was after going to Shiva, I was able to learn through these sugyas. He says, you know what? It's because Chedvah Kislev, you don't want to do it in the summer, right? Imagine doing Svira, having shock absorber days. Shavuos would be a day off. People would be confused. You can't do it then. And we want between Shavuos and Shavuos and Batamas, and Yonah Diyayimah here, right? We want 40 days because Meshach Rabbeinu went up and then came down and broke the Luchais. So you want 40 days between Shavuos and the fast of next week. Don't play with those days. Leave it in the winter when it's clear of anything exciting. So that always bothered me. What do you mean clear of anything? If it's during Hanukkah, it's so confusing. If someone has Yahrzeit, on the last day of Hanukkah. Someone says, the last day of Hanukkah. It's not necessarily the last day of Hanukkah. It's sometimes the second of Teves, or it's the third of Teves. Right? It could be the second of Teves, third of Teves. Don't say the last. Mishabur brings the real law says, don't say the last day of Hanukkah. You may be commemorating the wrong day. My oldest daughter went out. His birthday was I wasn't sure. I looked. I said, "Wow, his birthday is like the last day of Hanukkah. It was the last day of Hanukkah, not the last day of Hanukkah." And he told me after he was born at night. And I saw the resume. I looked up the Hebrew day. I thought, "Oh, look at this! He was born on that magic day, Gimel Teves. Perfect, Gimel Teves." And it was some years Hanukkah, some years not Hanukkah. Wow! And then Baruch Hashem, they're married. They live in Muncie. But when they got engaged, I said, "Were you talking about the last day of Hanukkah or the year with your mitzvah?" He said, "No, I was born at night." Oh, you know, don't say that on the resume, right? Hey, just said the English day, his birthday. So, or the resume, Dor Yisharim, you get it in many ways. You get the birthday, Lamaisa. But why Hanukkah? So confusing. I want to say like this. So with this, I'll conclude. Because during Hanukkah, what are the things the Chashmonaim? I know it's the wrong time of year, but you'll say the Vart. What do the Avonim want to stop? Mila, Shabbos, and Rosh Chodesh. Mila, that's Avraham Avinu. Shabbos, right? That's the what defines part of Yiddishkeit. Rosh Chodesh, Masech Shlacht. What's so the Rosh Chodesh? What's so bad? So we know the answer. The answer is no. Rosh Chodesh is the basis of all Yom Tovim. If you don't have Rosh Chodesh, when is Rosh Hashanah, when is Sukkot, when is Purim? We live, Yidden live by Yom Tovim. Our Yom Tovim, Baruch Hashem. We celebrate Yom Tovim, right, Baruch Hashem, and we celebrate the secular Yom Tovim, as Avi Darzai, in a beautiful way, of coming together to sit and learn Torah in such a beautiful way. But Yom Tovim, imagine not knowing when Yom Tov is. It would be devastating. It would destroy Rachman al-Islam, Kal Yisrael. So you know what? Mida Keneged Mida, we tell the Yavanim, you try to uproot the calendar, guess what? During Kislev, at the beginning of Kislev, we're going to put 29 or 30, and we're going to start the tikkun, the fixing of the calendar. And we're going to have the Makav HaPatish, the final blow, the nail that's going to be nailed into the year. During Hanukkah, is it 29 days? Kislev, is it 30 days? Once we do that, the year is set. The rest of the year is set. If you're supposed to leap year or not, can't have a calculation. Everything's in place. Rosh Hashanah this year was determined during Hanukkah. When there were 29 days in Kislev, that was it. Done. Rosh Hashanah's in place. So during Hanukkah, when the Yavanim tried to uproot our calendar, that's when we fixed the calendar so that we celebrate Yom Tovim and our bar mitzvahs and the bas mitzvahs and all everything related to the calendar. We're able to do it based on the time of the Moilad, which determines Rosh Hashanah, which determines the entire year. Thank you very much. I'll be happy to take questions. Yes. A little louder, maybe come a little closer. Yes.